The following is a 1250 WTMA special presentation.
Live this weekend where the good times are. WTMA, Mighty 1250.
Hi, this is John Quincy, welcoming you to another hour of the History of TMA. WTMA has been a part of Charleston since 1939. It's the city's second oldest radio station, right behind the old WCSC at 1390 AM, and the only AM outlet with its original set of call letters. Today we're looking back at the station's rich heritage. It might be hard to believe, but in the 60s and 70s, this radio station, WTMA, was one of the biggest top 40 stations not only in Charleston, but in the Southeast. Kind of like the 95SX of Charleston. In fact, WTMA-FM later became 95SX.
And now, stand by for more music and fun with Uncle Boo!
You're listening to the train that may run me out of town on a rail after tonight's show, friends. Go to Chattanooga. I understand they have a ball down there, huh?
If there's one air personality who was Mr. WTMA in the 60s and 70s, it was Bob Booby Nash.
Oh, Chattanooga Choo Choo is done by none other than that great group known as Harper's Bazaar. 7 minutes past 11 o'clock, and welcome into the final Uncle Boo Radio Show, Graham. All right, no more politics, because we did that last hour. But I just want to point out to the public, and point out to Columbia, and point out to those sled agents and the makers of those fantastically ridiculous blue laws, that at least one person isn't afraid to speak out or lose their job for something that's unconstitutional, no matter if it's in the South Carolina Constitution. Cloudy skies, we're hitting 46 degrees out of the complete weather for you at 11:15. Now it's time for fun and games.
In 2005, we had the pleasure of spending some quality time with Uncle Boob to talk about his time at the mighty TMA.
The history of TMA.
Okay, we're talking to a real WTMA broadcasting legend, a guy.
A real one. Come on.
A real one, not one of those pretenders.
No fakes here. Now, before we begin the interview, John, I got to ask you if we can do like 60 minutes. If there's a question that you ask that I don't like, I can rip off the microphone and throw it down and say, that's it.
That's exactly what you can do. You can do. But hopefully these will all be questions that you like.
I can do that.
As you probably know, it's Booby Nash. Booby Nash, thank you so much for spending some time with us talking about your time at WTMA.
Well, my closest friends call me Booby, okay? So feel free to call me Mr. Nash.
He hasn't lost it. Now, you came to WTMA in 1966, right?
1966. It was the week before July 4th. I came into town with 10 bucks in my pocket. I had borrowed 50. It cost 40 bucks to go from Greensboro, North Carolina to Charleston. So I spent the 40 and kept the 10. I came down to fill in for a month. That's true. It actually came from Buffalo to return my car in Greensboro, which was being repossessed because I had been out of work for a month. I was just resting. And then a friend of mine called me and said, would I come down to TMA in Charleston just to fill in for a month? So I didn't have any money. So a friend in Greensboro said, here's 50 bucks. Go on down there and fill in for a month. And so I came and I had 10 bucks. One of the jocks let me stay at his apartment until I got my first paycheck, which was 3 weeks later. I lived on salads and crackers for the first 3 weeks. And then in the fourth week, I told them I was getting ready to go back to Buffalo because I was only there for a month. And they liked it so much that they said, please stay. And they gave me a raise. And so I stayed. That was in 66. And when I finally left TMA, we were in the 80s.
So you were doing the night show when you came?
Yes. I did 7 till 1 o'clock. We signed off at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
In the morning.
All right. Now, that was the Dock Street Theater days, right?
That's right. We were over the Dock Street Theater. I would wave to the people coming into the shows and hissing and booing. And we had a lot of fun at the Dock Street Theater.
So it was nice to be at that location as opposed to just being in a shopping center or being, you know, out at the transmitter site.
Yeah. There's something impressive about saying broadcasting live from atop the Dock Street Theater. You know, it made you sound like you were more than a disc jockey, you know. But, yeah, we really enjoyed it.
But what were your first impressions of the radio station other than, hey, they're paying me to work here for a couple of weeks?
Oh, WTMA was a great radio station. It stayed on top of all the latest broadcasting facilities, the equipment was up to date. I was really impressed. In fact, it was big time radio. It didn't have anything less than what WABC would have in New York. I mean, they were up to date. And the talent was great. You had Charlie Kerwin, who was Charlie Brown. Dave Lloyd was there. These were not big names yet, but they were soon to become big names. So I was impressed, and I was a little intimidated. But I was only there for a month, so I didn't have to worry about keeping my job. I wasn't there to do that. So they put me on at night. And I just did what I wanted, and I had a good time. At least I was having a good time, and they liked what they heard. So I was excited to be part of the team. I consider myself probably the worst of all the disc jockeys. Well, I never considered myself a disc jockey. I just like to entertain, you know, have fun, have a party, and play records. My dad always said to me, when are you going to get a job? And I said, well, I got a job. I'm working at a radio station. He said, playing records is not a job, you know. But I made a career out of it and raised a family on it and did it for 30 years.
Who are some of the other names from the late 60s that you remember working with?
Oh, we had Wayne Long in the news department. In fact, he was the news department. And in those days, you only had one newsman, and they called it a news department. Wayne Long did a wonderful job. Let me see who was on. John Smith. I call him the two-story outhouse. John Smith, whose real name was Dick Andert. And he's the one who sang the theme. And I don't know whether we've got that around anymore, but it's the big boob. It's the big boob.
It's on one of your air checks. It's on the website.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. He sang that and did that, and he went out to California. I'm trying to think of who the morning man was at the time. It was probably Dave Lloyd. Ron Childers was there at that time. And when I came there, there was a transition of people. It's hard to remember who was there. At that time, you didn't stay at a radio station more than maybe 3 years. That would be tops, sometimes just a year. And being that TMA in Charleston was not a major market, it was a good market, but it wasn't a major market, and people were aiming for Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Buffalo and those type of cities. And so they would come through here, get themselves some good air checks and a good rating, and then present themselves to a larger market.
Do you remember how much preparation you put into going on the air?
Absolutely none, really, except for doing drop-ins where, you know, I would have voices come in and talk with me, or what we call drop-ins, funny voices, funny sayings. Except for that, I didn't really prepare.
What about the jokes and stuff you use? Were those pretty much off the top of your head?
Off the top of the head.
Did you use a service?
Well, after a few years, I learned that you could use a service, you know, that there was such a thing as people who would write. But I didn't find anybody had the same sense of humor I did, except for this one service. There was a service called the Electric Weenie. Tom somebody wrote it, and it was my sense of humor. Typical one-liner would be, I'm going over to my mother-in-law's for shish kebab. I like the way she makes her shish kebab. She lights an arrow and shoots it into a garbage can. You know, just quick off-the-wall stuff. I like that. And so if you prepare for that, it doesn't come off.
Now, one of the air checks that's on the website from the late 60s, it almost sounds like you're doing talk radio because you're talking about issues. I think you were talking about the blue law and how you were against it and how it was really, really stupid. Did you do that kind of thing often or just whenever you felt like it?
No, just and the idea was to shock people because disc jockeys never said anything that was important. You know, we just didn't, except for the time and temperature. You know, all the rest of the stuff didn't amount to much, you know, because it was fun. It was Top 40 was supposed to be fun. You know, we didn't get into serious issues. And so to make a statement that the blue laws were stupid would put you on the edge. People would say, oh, he's going to get fired for saying that. See, in those days, that, you know, people were shocked, you know, at that. Well, today it takes a lot more to shock people on radio. But in those days, for a disc jockey to actually give his opinion about something, and I didn't care about the blue laws. I really didn't. I didn't care. You know, I had my brown bag. That's all that mattered. But it was to get people saying, did you hear what Booby Nash said today? In fact, they ended up putting up a billboard that said that. Did you hear what Booby Nash said today? It was to be outrageous. I think today we've pushed the envelope so far that nothing really is outrageous anymore. You can't shock people anymore.
It's pretty hard. People are trying it, you know, right and left, and it's amazing some of the crap they put on the air.
Right.
Although they don't
see, we couldn't use that word. We could not use the word crap on the radio. You'd be fired.
Yeah.
Because I tried it, you know, and they threatened me. That was a naughty word. See, you're going to get in trouble.
That was the Booby Nash Show.
That did it. I'm throwing off the microphone right now. Don't ask me another question about crap. All right.
The Booby Nash Show at night. Were you geared more towards the teenage audience in your content?
Well, I thought I was. I thought of young people when I go. Well, I was a young person myself. I was 25. You know, that's still young. And I thought I was, but they said that I had 65% of the audience, and 69% of that 65% was adult.
Wow.
They advertised that. I had more adults telling me, I would never listen to you. And I said, why? They said, because just the other night you said. See? The actual thing we did that I believed in radio was that you either got them to love you or hate you.
Let's talk about John Tritton, who came to WTMA, I guess, in the late 60s as program director.
Right. I worked with John on WAIR in Winston-Salem, and he was doing the all-night show, and I was doing the early night show in Winston-Salem. When I left there, I went back to Greensboro, then to Buffalo, then I came down here for the month. After I was here for a while, Charlie Kerwin, who asked me to come down, also knew John Tritton. And as I said, we were in transition then. A lot of disc jockeys leaving, a lot coming, who wanted to work on TMA. We had air checks coming in every day. People wanted to work at TMA. It was the place either used as a stepping stone or let me just get there, I'll stay, you know. And we needed someone. We asked John Tritton to come down. I think he took the morning. Then he became program director. And through the years, in the 70s, he became general manager of WTMA. So he wanted to get into the sales and the managing and the programming, and I was in the entertainment field. So I was just the opposite, and we worked together throughout those years. John was a great guy. He had great ideas for contests. He's the one who came up with all those wild contests, you know, high-low that you can hear on some of the air checks. And Diamond a Day, we gave away a diamond a day. Don't ask me if they were real. I have no idea. I never saw one, so I don't even know if the winners were real. No, we didn't do that. We had real stuff. But John just moved up the ladder and became management and still held down the morning show once in a while. I mean, he like to broadcast.
What about Chuck Smith, the longtime owner of WTMA?
Chuck Smith was a businessman first. I don't know if he was really real to us or not. You know, he played us a lot. You know, he pretended he liked us, that we really meant something to him. But, you know, when you were gone, you were gone. You know, if you could bring in money, Chuck was one of those. If your ratings were good, you were his best friend. If your ratings were bad, you're gone. You know, and he was strictly a businessman. Nice guy, but a businessman.
Did you work with Ted Turner? Did you know much about him?
I worked for Ted Turner. Is that what you asked?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you have any dealings with Ted Turner?
I didn't work with him. No one works with Ted Turner. Yes, I remember the day he came in. He had bought the radio station from Chuck Smith. He acted like he was anxious to meet Booby Nash, and I was so thrilled. I didn't really know who he was. I knew he owned an outdoor sign company in Atlanta, but I didn't, you know, he wasn't the Ted Turner he is today. Or, you know, I shook his hand and said it was a pleasure to meet him. But he acted as though we were somebody. I was impressed with him. In later years, I wasn't so much impressed with him, just simply because I don't like his politics. I don't like his attitude. But when you have money like that, you can afford to have an attitude like that. But he was very pleasant when he bought TMA and very outgoing to us. And, you know, the new broom sweeps clean didn't happen with him. He kept everybody on staff.
How long were you doing the night show at TMA?
I did the night show from 1966 to about 1970. I did it for about 4 years, and then I moved into afternoon drive. Then I did mornings for a while. Then I think I went back to afternoon drive. I was there a total of 11 to 12 years.
Okay.
So that's a long time to be at one station.
Why do you think TMA was as big and as huge and as special as it is?
Well, because it was first with everything. We kept updating. We did contests. Other stations did contests, but we just kept doing it. And somebody said we were buying the audience. But listen, you could listen to the high-low game, which was you had to guess what amount of money was in the jackpot. And if you guessed too high, the little thing goes whoop up, and it'd say you're too high. Well, I was listening to an air check the other day, and the person guessed. Now, the advertisement is we're giving away thousands of dollars, okay? And the girl guesses $26.50. And the machine says, whoop, too high. And I said, we're giving away thousands of dollars, and $26 is too high? I said, so it wasn't really buying an audience. We had fun games. We had fun disc jockeys. We had fun games, and we played the fun records. I mean, the record, you didn't have to worry about bad words in the records. They were always upbeat. We played at least two fast records to one slow. Everything was upbeat. And we didn't take ourselves serious, and I think that helped us.
It's 12 minutes past 11 o'clock, 11:12 with the Big Bath of the South. Uncle Boo presenting the Beast of the East in the final hour of Part 2. Cloudy skies at 46, going to get down there tonight to 33.
WTMA, the station where the W means wonderful. We lost our W once, but our vast listening audience, you, found it for us. Now we'd never be without it again, thanks to you. Stay tuned to WTMA, better than ever in 68.
You figure with all the technical things they have in 68, if we ever lost our W again, we'd look sort of stupid, wouldn't we? Anybody who loses their W would be stupid. Well, we were stupid. We lost our W one time. anybody who, actually, what do you need a W for if you've got friends, right? So you can just call us TMA. It's 12:30 past the hour of 11 o'clock. Jolly holiday upcoming. Gotta say hello to Dorothy. Gotta say hello to Jimmy. Got to, but I'm not going to. Here comes Hunter Job by Martha and the Vandellers.
More of our conversation with the one and only Booby Nash is coming up on the History of TMA.
To historic Charleston, we welcome you. So have a TMA-rific good time.
Now, here's more of the History of TMA with John Quincy.
You're listening to our special retrospective on the history of WTMA, the station that generations of Charlestonians have grown up with. And many of the folks listening right now remember the voice of Booby Nash coming out of their transistor radios in the 60s and the 70s.
That's number three on the WTMA. Tune to X on the final hour of the Booby Nash radio show gram, Uncle Boob and Company, the most talked about radio show gram of the Carolinas. You know what you're saying, you dirty little... Oh, by the way, somebody called up and said, hey, Big Boo, why don't you tell some political jokes tonight? Well, I'd like to, but there's only one trouble with political jokes. They're usually elected.
The History of TMA.
I want to ask you about some of the people that worked at WTMA at the same time. I'll just throw out some names and just give me some feedback.
Okay.
Terry Allen.
Terry Allen, the local boy who done did good. Terry Allen was a unique person. He still is. This guy wanted to work weekends. We call him our weekend warrior. He was an entrepreneur as far as he started businesses. He had a submarine sandwich shop. He did record hops. He started the mobile business. He was instrumental in starting all these little businesses. He hired kids to go out and play records at weddings and that. He was the big gun and the first gun that I know of that did that sort of thing. And he always had his hand in radio. He was a fun person to be around. But he was the local guy who did good. There was one other like him, and that was a fellow by the name of Jim Diamond, or Bob Kite was his real name. There was two of them that they did part-time work, and they were happy with it.
Anything more you can say about Mr. Diamond while we're on the subject?
While we're talking about Jim Diamond? Yeah, he was a fun guy. He had a good sense of humor. He worked weekends, and he worked full-time. I think he was trying to find himself, but he loved radio. He had the radio bug, and he was a likable fella. Once again, the guys at TMA, we didn't have too many ego people, you know, that had big egos. We just did it for fun. And Jim Diamond, you could tell he was doing it for fun.
What do you remember about Robert Wayne Anderson, one of the nighttime DJs?
Robert Wayne Anderson was not like the rest of us. He was a little different. He was, I believe he was our first long-haired hippie creep, what we would consider long-haired hippie creep. He was a very intelligent person. Which threw us because not that disc jockeys are dumb. Now you need to know a lot more to be on radio. You have to be aware of. But in those days, once again, it was just all about fun. Robert Wayne Anderson was very serious about life, political issues, and that. And that sort of came out in his radio broadcasting. He was just different from us. A nice guy, but we considered him a little on the edge of weird.
Ted Bell.
Ted Bell. Teddy Bear would be a good description of him. Just a nice guy. He came out of the Orangeburg South Carolina area. I think he worked broadcasting there, had a nice, pleasant voice, was an announcer type, and was a family man. He was a good guy.
Jay Bond.
You know, I didn't get to know Jay as much as I wanted to. He came out of the Columbia area, and he was a production type guy. So when he went on the radio, he was more time and temperature and produced his show. It was a very clean show. You know, it was mainly music, and he would blend it all together. But he was a production type guy.
Brother Dave.
Brother Dave Derrick. Now, he was a hippie creep. Dave was into partying more than I was. I think if you told him that the grass growing out in front of his house would make him high, he'd eat it all. He was a party guy, and he was a party guy on the radio. Everything was a party to him. Life was just fun. He was different from the rest of us, too. He was more of the new breed coming in. He was more of a hippie than we were.
John Burwell.
John Burwell. Well, you know, his father owned a radio station in Rock Hill, and John was Mr. Nice Guy. Now, I was just told stories of what he did outside radio. We would fellowship a lot outside radio, and he would have an occasional beer, but I understand he was a lot wilder when I wasn't around. But we would call him Mr. Nice Guy. He was into production also. He liked to produce his radio show. Everything had to be perfect. You know, on my show, you couldn't tell when I made a mistake because it all sounded like a mistake. With his show, you would never hear a mistake. I mean, he was articulate in his speaking. His record started right on time. He was just Mr. Perfection, but a real nice guy, easy to get along with.
Al Gilford.
Al was fun. He worked the all-night show, so we didn't party much. He had the all-night show, and everybody liked Al Gilford. He didn't play any politics. He was out in the open. I don't know if this is a good term nowadays, but it was in those days. He was just a sweet kid, just a real sweet kid. What made him unique is he was so big, and yet he was just like a little kid, you know. And he was new to the business when he came to us.
Who's Dave Lloyd?
Dave Lloyd was married, had twin sons, was the morning man at TMA in the mid-60s. We were still at the Dock Street Theater. He was a great talent, had a very coarse sense of humor, I'd put it. It was a wise guy type of sense of humor. It was a British type sense of humor whereby you had to think about what he said. He was very clever, could do voices. He came up with a voice and called it Chesney Beamish. And Chesney Beamish owned a grit farm, which I thought was very clever. There was grit trees, and Chesney would pick the grits off the tree. I mean, this guy had a great sense of humor, and I liked his humor. I liked his show. I didn't like him because he ended up being program director, and one of the first things he wanted to do was fire me.
Coming up, more with Booby Nash on the history of TMA.
WTMA number one surfs up.
For more about WTMA's past, surf to WTMAmemories.com for recordings, interviews, pictures, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. John Quincy will be back with more of the history of TMA coming up on Charleston's 1250 WTMA. You're listening to the history of TMA.
WTMA, mighty TMA.
With more, here's Charleston radio historian John Quincy.
Let's continue our conversation with the one and only Booby Nash. I want to ask you about some of the people that worked at WTMA at the same time. I'll just throw out some names and just give me some feedback.
Okay.
Gary London.
I think he would be known as a local who went full-time and became sex. Actually, I think he's out of Walterboro originally, or that area. And Gary London was your typical top 40 disc jockey. He was good. I mean, he could work at any radio station because he could be humorous or he could just do time and temperature and make it sound like a party. He was good at what he did. He was the disc jockey. I could say with the voice that he had and everything, he would be the type of disc jockey I would want to be if I wasn't living off humor. Because he had the voice, he had the personality, he had the bubble. And he was one that went on TMA, left TMA, came back to TMA. I mean, he was always welcome back to you.
Jack Lundy.
Jack Lundy loved doing production. Believe it or not, he is the first. I'm glad you brought up his name. I really like that man. But he was the first jock that I ever met that was shy. He was shy. I mean, you wouldn't catch him out in public. He was very shy. He was even shy when he was on the radio. But he had a wonderful voice, and he was really a nice guy.
Did you work with Bob McLean when he was program director?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Bob McLean is a funny story. I gave him one of his first jobs. He worked at WBAG in Burlington, North Carolina, and we hired him into Greensboro at WPET. And so John Trenton and I were both familiar with him, and eventually we hired him. When John was moving up to management, TMA hired Bob McLean as program director. He did voices and wild things. He was known as Crazy Bob, and he did mornings at TMA. He was a good jock.
Keith Nichols.
Oh, could I do him in? Keith Nichols came out of Columbia. He was going to college in Columbia, and then he came to TMA. I don't know if he came into the news first or disc jockey first, but he was good at both. Keith was one of those multiple type guys. You could use him any place in radio. It did not surprise me that he went into television. He handles himself very well. He could do a disc jockey show and sound hip, or he could turn around and do news and sound like the most authoritative man. He had a great voice, nice personality, just a good guy.
Speaking of TV people, were you there when Bill Sharp was there?
Yeah, Bill Sharp was going to college, and he came to us during the summertime just to fill in, to help in with news. He was fun to be around. I think what you see on television with Bill is the real Bill Sharp. He was not phony in any way, and he was enjoyable to work with.
Ron Phelps.
Him and I were very close, almost like brothers. Got to know his wife, Judy. Ron was a midday man, so he was one of those disc jockeys, you know, when he left, no one would remember him. He would crack jokes once in a while. I'll tell you what, jocks in those days, the ones that didn't crack jokes and did mainly time and temperature, they still were being themselves. That's what made them personalities. They weren't trying to be disc jockeys. Now, you could listen to a lot of radio stations where the jock is being the jock, but at TMA, everybody, even if they were just doing time and temperature, they each were individuals. No one ever said we all sounded alike because we had our own unique way to do it, and Ron Phelps was one of those guys. He left us and went into the record promoting business. And then died a few years later of some illness.
Did you work with Doug Randall?
Yes, I did. Doug Randall was off the air when I got there. He was a head of sales for WTMA, but he was a local guy who became a weekend disc jockey and then became a big disc jockey before I even got here. He's, of course, the voice for Dixie'll Do It because Dixie don't care. He was well-loved. He was the original local boy who did good. Everybody knew Doug Randall. I became very close with him. We played poker on weekends, and he died a few years ago. Everybody knew Doug Randall. In fact, Doug Randall was Mr. TMA for years.
Lee Richards.
Lee Richards was program director for a while. He did mornings. Pretty straight guy. Was real nice. I don't know what happened to him. I never really got along with Lee. It's not that we were at odds. It's just I was a clown, and he was all business. You know, this it was serious to him. He was one of the serious guys in the broadcasting. Not that broadcasting isn't serious, but come on, folks. You know, getting paid to play records, you know. That's when we used records.
Bob Riley.
Bob Riley, my twin. Him and I really got along real good, and he got married while he was here, which ended his career of partying a little bit. But we used to party all the time together. I think when I was doing mornings, he followed me on midday, and he worked a couple of different shifts. Very good disc jockey, but he did it for fun. He was a fun guy. Young fella.
Steve Russell.
Steve Russell came out of Bamberg. He would visit TMA. I remember as a kid, he would come in and his eyes would be big as saucers, and it was his dream. Can you imagine somebody growing up just wanting to work on TMA? That was him. He was a TMA freako, and his dream came true. He came on TMA. I would call him Mr. Production. He produced the radio show that he was on. He did a lot of the commercials. Off the air, produced him. He was one of the production types that was a perfectionist at being a disc jockey, and he was good.
J.J. Scott.
I can't say anything bad about J.J. because my wife is still in love with J.J. Scott. This was a multi-talented person. he did voices, but he did real, you know, I would do comical voices. He could do real voices and was an expert production man for doing commercials. Had a great sense of humor. He was one of those long hairs that joined us. He just fit into the family. He was a lovable guy. Didn't have an ego, just wanted to have fun on the radio, was good at what he did. He was a more well-produced radio program with humor, and he knew what was hot. He was a mixture of top 40 radio and album-oriented radio. He could do either one.
Randy Scott.
Randy Scott was my brother. Randy Scott was a young man who started doing part-time radio, and he was born and raised in Charleston. He was wild, both on and off the air. This boy lived in a, I thought I lived in a make-believe world. He could insult you, loved insulting people. That was his humor. And he insulted somebody on the air, on radio at WQSN. He was working over there. They told him on the telephone, he was on the air with him. He said, I'm going to come down there and beat you up. And Randy called me and said, I think a guy's coming down. And I was on the air at the time he was. And he called me over at TMA and said, I think there's a guy coming down to beat me up. What should I do? I said, well, lock all the doors. Well, he did, and hours later, he had to leave the station sooner or later, and he walked out. A guy hit him with a beer bottle right in his face, busted out two of his front teeth, and you think that would have been a lesson for Randy. He thought it was funny. He thought it was funny, and he became a great disc jockey, but his humor was to cut everybody else down. He was fun. He became the airplane pilot and reporter for traffic for WCSC. And I was doing the morning show, and he was up there, and we would wisecrack with one another on the air, and then he'd finally get, sometimes we wouldn't even have time for the traffic because we were too busy clowning around on the air. And I was doing the morning show the morning his plane went down 50 feet. He just took it off, and the plane crashed, and he lived 11 days after that.
How did that play out on the air?
On the air, I had just opened up the radio program shortly after 6, and he was supposed to be up in the air, and our first record was coming to an end, and we would go to the traffic immediately. So while the record was on, I checked with him, and I said, are you up? Which meant, are you in the air? Because sometimes he ran late. He said, yes. Which was a bad thing to say because that was a lie just before he went down. He was at the end of the runway just taking off. And so I said, okay, you have 60 seconds. That's about as much as he said, okay. After the record was over, I went to him, introduced him, and went to him, and there was nothing. At that time, our phones were ringing. Believe it or not, C.J. Jones, who was over at WTMA, we had switched places, and he was over at TMA. I was over at CSC. C.J. Jones called and said he had heard on the scanner that a plane was down. At that time, our newsman came, which I think at the time was detective on
CSC? Jacobs.
Harv Jacobs said, I think he's down. And that's how that started to play out. I couldn't believe it. Once again, he lived 11 days, and there was miracles during that time. The family was renewed, and there was a lot that happened down at the hospital, but he eventually died.
What did WCSC do? Was that the end of their traffic reports, or did they get
else? Yeah, we didn't go back up in the air after that. I think they were planning to. I don't know whether they really did or not, because then shortly after that, I left.
Billy Smith.
Billy Smith. Now, I'm not going to tell you any stories about Billy Smith because they're too wild, too long and involved, but Billy Smith comes from Myrtle Beach. He was a disc jockey that no matter what he said, he would laugh at it. He was the laughing disc jockey as far as I'm concerned. He had a great sense of humor, great thoughts on radio, and he was like me, probably a sloppy jock as far as producing his show, but he had a lot of fun on the radio, and people loved him. He was not with us very long. He went back to Myrtle Beach, but Billy Smith is one of my favorite people in radio.
What about John Smith, a.k.a. Dick Andert?
Dick Andert was a time and temperature guy. If you said anything that was a little off color, he would turn red. He got embarrassed easily. He was a midday man. He was suave, good-looking fella. Everybody liked him. He fit real well in midday because he knew how to reach the women.
Jerry Smith.
Jerry Smith was into everything. He was part-time. He was full-time. He was into the electronics of radio. He was more interested in what made radio work, the latest equipment. than he was being on the radio. He enjoyed being on the radio, but it was sort of a plain Jane type of radio show that he did.
Rick Tracy.
Rick Tracy was a bubbling personality. He wasn't with us very long, but he was great off the air and on the air. He always wore a hat. He was the originator of the man with a hat.
How about Kirk Varner? What kind of stuff can you tell me about Kirk?
Kirk Varner was a little teenager, skinny, scrawny little guy. If it wasn't for his Adam's apple, he wouldn't even have any kind of shape to him at all. he was just a kid who was excited about radio. He did well on the radio. I think he was told to find another career, though, that he would do better at. But he was fun, and he was refreshing. He was a local fellow who went on to do big things, I understand.
Okay, let's talk about some of the news people that you work with at WTMA.
Oh, good.
What about Steve Bell?
Steve Bell. You never know, Steve was a newsman once he was off the air, because he was just one big jolly clown. He enjoyed life. But on the radio, he was a good newsman. He would get the news. I mean, he just wouldn't rip and read. There was a saying in a lot of radio stations that they just ripped it and read it. Steve actually would make phone calls and chase down stories. And he was good. He knew what he was doing.
Tom Barry.
I would probably say he was one of the first professional newsmen we had. Tom came off professional, and once again, he wasn't a ripping reader. He wanted to know the inside story on stories, and he was good, had a great news voice.
Did you work with Bill Edwards?
Yes, I did. Bill Edwards, to me, was he had no business being in news. He was a disc jockey, and he was a lot of fun, and news people aren't supposed to be fun, you know.
Franco Hunt.
My man. Frank was a local guy. He knew what was happening. He knew everybody. And if you wanted to really know the news, you would listen to Frank. And a nice guy for being a newsman. I mean, as nice as newsmen get.
Al Cammie.
Al Cammie. Oh, you know, who can relate to Al Cammie? He was intelligent. You know, come on. People in radio in those days weren't supposed to be intelligent. He was a class newsman. You ask him about anything, not just news. Ask Al. He had an answer. It wasn't necessarily the right answer, but he always had an answer.
Wayne Long.
The first real newsman that TMA ever had. We were still in the Dock Street Theater upstairs, and he was a lot like Franco Hunt. He knew a lot of people, and he would really get the stories. When you heard the news from Wayne Long, you got it straight from the politician. He knew every politician. He ended up working for a politician in PR up in Washington. Wayne Long was the original newsman at TMA.
How about Ray Campbell?
Ray Campbell, I believe he was a local guy. He knew everybody in town. He was one of those who, like Wayne Long and a few others, just knew everybody. So he didn't have to get his news off the teletype. He would get it off the telephone. He would get it direct. He would call Washington. Ray just knew everybody. Him and the coroner were close friends, so we knew everybody who was dead or should be. And Ray was on top of the news. He really was.
There's still more with Booby Nash coming up next on the History of TMA.
You're listening to a special WTMA presentation.
The History of TMA.
WTMA weather.
Well, the weatherman is forecasting cloudy and not quite as cold tonight, but we know better than to believe him, right? No, I'm only kidding. He's been doing pretty well in the new year. He forecasted we would have weather in 1969, and so far he hasn't been wrong. Friday it's going to be cloudy with rain likely spreading over the area and continuing Friday night. Would you believe our city has a temperature? Why not? The flu epidemic's around. It's cloudy skies at 34 degrees.
WTMA
yesterday.
The great sounds of yesteryear, the late and great Jesse Belvin, and good night, my love.
The History of TMA.
We're back again with Uncle Boob, Booby Nash. Who was your favorite sidekick you worked with over the years as far as when you were doing the mornings? I'm thinking mornings or afternoons. Who did you enjoy interacting with the most, news person or maybe another jock?
The greatest person that I've ever worked with that I can honestly say worked well with me and knew me real well and that I would consider probably the best partner I ever had is me. And and I thought I was quite good at it. No, I'll be honest with you. My favorite person to work with, if I ever had to do a dual show, would have been Randy Scott. Randy Scott was funny. He knew how I thought. He would do and say crazy things that would fit right in with where I was thinking. We paled around outside. We would go out of town and party. We would start partying in Charleston, and we would find ourselves in Buford. And I'd say, Randy, what are we doing here? He said, I don't know. I mean, we just had fun both off and on the air. So we knew how one another thought. And you could throw him a line, and he would make something. And at CSC, it really showed in our quick back and forth as he was flying over Charleston doing the traffic reports. I really missed him when he died. I really did. There was a big loss in my life. I have pictures of him at home, personal pictures. And he was like a brother. And I worked with other people. I worked with Buzz Bowman. Buzz and I, Booby and Buzz, we did a dual show. I don't know what happened to CJ at the time. He was out of the picture. But for a short time, I did it with Buzz. And that was fun, but it wasn't the same.
What about program directors? Of all the program directors you had here in Charleston, who was your favorite to work for?
That would be me. I was program director for a year, and I gave myself a raise, gave myself an easy shift. The best program director was John Trenton, by far. John Trenton was the greatest program director. He knew what I was all about and knew how to channel that. And he did this with a lot of the jocks. He would find out what their temperaments were, because we all have egos, you know, to a certain extent. And he just knew how to, if he didn't want you to do something that you were doing, he knew how to approach you. So I would say in that way, he was a good program director. He knew how to fire people. He knew how to threaten to fire. He had a way about him that was very good. And that's why he went into management.
You mentioned that you were program director of WTMA. Was that your first time being a PD?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would fill in once in a while between PDs. But when I was filling in, they would really hurry to get someone to replace. Program directing in those days, you picked the music that would be played, you know. You would check out the surveys to see what songs were really selling, and then you'd make up the tune decks. You would deal with the record promoters. If they took you out to dinner a lot, why, you would play their records a lot, you know. It was fun being program director because you got all the extra free goodies. I got two golden records at home. One was Let's Spend the Night Together.
Rolling Stones?
No. Maybe that's not what it was called. I'd have to look. It's behind my bar that I don't use anymore. The other one was Donna Summer. As a program director, if you help make it a gold record, you got a gold record. And so I got two of them within that year. It was fun. I didn't like the pressure, though. I mean, I didn't want to be program director. You think you do until you sit in there, and then it's all on your shoulders as to what the ratings are going to do.
Were you program director up until the time that you left to go to WCSC, or did somebody else come in?
No, somebody else came in. Crazy Bob McLean was program director after I had sat in there for a while.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6:37. This is Uncle Boo for John Trent this morning, who's continuing his three-week extended vacation tour in Monk's Corner and Goose Creek. Oh, that lucky guy.
Hello.
Hello, great Louis Armstrong, Solid Gold, and hello, Dolly. WTMA's Good Morning Fun Time at 6:40. It's Big Boo all this week for vacationing John Trent. As you know, since I've been doing the morning show, I've been trying to trade with one of the listeners out there my big 1966 car, the 1966 Boob Special. I understand right after I got off the air yesterday morning, we had a very good deal on the car trade-in. Mr. Litchenfield called up and said he'd take the 1966 Boob Special and trade it for his pen and pencil set. You dirty little...
Of all the radio stations you've worked for, would you say WTMA holds a special place?
Would
be the number one in your...
Oh, yes, yeah. I spent 3 years in Buffalo and 1 year in Albany, New York, and I spent 3 years in Greensboro. And Greensboro, WPET, which was a daytimer, beat all the full-timers. I was there from 63 to 66, and I thought that was the greatest little radio station. But TMA was home. TMA felt good. We had a lot of people come through, but every person who came there just fit right into the family.
All right. Anything else you want to say about WTMA?
No, it's good to come home once in a while and see what people are doing here.
That'll do it for this portion of Big Boobin' Comedy, and I'm happy to say this portion is being recorded and sent to our armed services around the world to be used as target practice.
A great big thank you to Booby Nash for his memories of the mighty TMA. I'm John Quincy, and if you'd like to find out more about WTMA's heritage, check out this website, WTMAmemories.com. There you'll find historic recordings, photos, interviews, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. and keep it here on the Charleston station that continues to make history, as well as report it. 1250 WTMA.